When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow, Met, fellow adventurers, we are in the Lakeshore Tavern. In the previous episode, we climbed a giant statue, met someone who has been somehow tied in with the machinations of the time crab, and then we didn't because it got all wibbly wobbly timey wimey, and then we sat by the fireplace a lot. I managed to find 24 adventure tokens, which I'll probably do something with eventually, bringing us up to 262. Anyway, back to the fireplace. We've still got more to do there. There's a painting there. There's an observation link for that. Let's check that again. The painting is an exceptional work of art that perfectly captures the colours and contours of the lake and the rugged beauty of the surrounding wilds. A small esh is etched onto the lower right corner of the picture, but that's providing a clue to the artist responsible for the masterpiece. Although you've yet to have it confirmed, you've heard a rumour suggesting the tavern's owner, the famed adventurer Sylvania, is the creator of the painting. You note, with no small degree of curiosity, a long, dark shadow stroked beneath the surface of the lake on the white side of the piece. Now let's take a closer look. You draw a chair up to the edge of the fireplace and climb up to it. Well, I probably have to get several chairs because Sir Croakington is very small. Or maybe I'm just going to hang on to the frame. And climb onto it to get a close-up view of the large painting. Well, I somehow get a close-up view. Maybe I just push the back of a chair. I can just stand on that instead. Yeah, something like that. And this is the same phrase again that you got from the observation link. While studying the painting, you note the massive work of framed art is hanging slightly askew. Well, we can't be having that. Attempt to straighten the painting. Gripping the painting by the lower corners of its massive frame, you carefully, very carefully, adjust it to its hanging perfectly straight. Suddenly, a small scrap of paper slips out from behind the painting and floats down to land at your feet. You pick up the paper and note the cracked, yellowed piece bears a curious sketch that appears to depict a crabbed claw enclosed in a triangle. The word Saphmore is scrawled beneath the inked symbol. Okay, yep. There's Zaphorian stuff going on here. Although, admittedly, Zaphorian stuff is going on in a lot of places. Because the Time Crab has many schemes. Or will have many schemes. Or did have many schemes. It's strange when you know when you're beyond time and space. Before you can turn the paper over to look at the opposite side, the brittle scrap crumbles into dust at your hand. It's countless particles drifting down onto the floor. Still wondering about the paper and its possible significance, you begin to prepare to climb down off the chair. Suddenly, without warning, the chair upon which you're perched begins to wobble, as to if its spindly legs start to come loose. You struggle to keep your balance as the chair starts to buckle. Okay, I've got options now. I could use restoration to fix the chair, shadow magic to help out in some way, or just leap off the chair. As a toad, Sir Croakington will be very good at that. But I'm going to use shadow magic because I'm kind of curious as to what will actually happen. Succeeded. 8 XP to shadow magic. You hurriedly channel your power of shadow magic, and a flood of harsh whispers surges through your mind. A split second later, a long arm of shadow, cast by one of the wooden columns standing to the west of the fireplace, slithers forward and steadies the buckling chair. You properly step off the chair onto the floor before the shadow retreats. Alright. Can I examine the painting again? Let's look at the large painting. I can straighten it again. Suddenly. Oh, it's the same symbol again. Recalling a previous episode with you, not this one, you slowly and carefully step off onto the floor. Alright. Straighten it, and... Who keeps putting pieces of paper with Zarthmore in there? Behind this painting. It's almost as if this piece of paper is stuck in a time loop or something. Well, maybe it is. I would assume that's not happened, not a programming error to make an event that's only supposed to happen once, not have a has happened equals one, then no. Sort of thing. Who knows? It's Arthmore. It's weird. Yeah. Okay. That's enough of climbing up on that chair again and again. I don't think I'm going to keep getting lucky. Step away from the fireplace. Alright, how to order food and drink. I'll just be going through the list systematically. The fare available at the lakeshore is about the best a weary traveller or a hungry adventurer might hope to find. The tavern has certainly earned a solid reputation for good, hearty food and robust drink offerings. I can start with a soothing song paleo, which we heard in the previous episode is apparently really, really good. The soothing song paleo indeed proves worthy of its colourful moniker. Served in heavy, engraved earthenware mugs, the paleo is thick, black, smoothingly warm and amazingly delicious. Weariness and chill melt away within moments of taking your first sip of the exceptional beverage. Now there's an observation link if I look at the mugs. The etchings, which appear to have been done quite recently, each depict a set of 3 concentric squares. Ooh, more Zarthmore stuff. After gazing at the markings for several seconds, you find it difficult to look away. Though after some effort, you manage to do so. The roasted nut faber seems more robust, though not at all bitter, in this special paleo. Alright, now for some roast mutton. Technically, I'm a vegetarian, But Sir Croakington isn't. The roast mutton served on a bed of seasoned field greens is a succulent, aromatic dish that is both filling and flavourful. It takes a small while for you to devour the generous portion, after which you find yourself growing slightly sleepy in the comforting glow of the crackling fire. Alright, now for some braised venison. Now, I'm going to assume these were actually eaten over several days, because otherwise Sir Croakin is going to be completely stuffed and won't be able to fit any more food in, even with the heroic appetite of most adventurers. Braised venison. The venison, blackened but tender, is served atop a mound of honey-glazed carrots and roasted potato wedges. Oh, I love that. The deer from which the venison was procured, as is true for all the wild fare available in the tavern, was hunted in the forest surrounding Winter Eye Lake. It requires some effort to finish the hot, fortifying meal in its entirety. Alright, now, the surprise stew. I hope the surprise isn't they suddenly throw stew in your face, because that would be a surprise. But probably not. Because I think that's the sort of thing you're not really supposed to do as, you know, the tavern. As a tavern owner, because you after the first few times, people stop coming if you keep throwing stew in their face, especially if it's hot, it's scalding hot stew. Surprise stew. The surprise stew is served in an earthenware bowl and topped with shaved white and yellow cheese. Two wedges of hard bread accompany the interesting concoction, the ingredients of which are never revealed. Despite your initial reluctance to consume the thick, meat-laden broth, you find the stew to be of excellent flavour and quite filling. After an aftertaste reminiscent of onions, though not quite the same, lingers on your tongue for some time following the meal. Maybe some Zathomorean ingredients have ended up in this stew. I mean, that would explain why everything's weird. Well, it's not quite like what we remember. Who knows? The Hushvale Ale. Hushvale Ale, named after a small village situated on the eastern shore of Winter Eye Lake. It's a thick, semi-sweet brew that initially stings the tongue. Once you manage to swallow the ale, its initial bite vanishes, replaced by a silky texture that carries with it a thick, somewhat sugary taste. As you reach the bottom of the tankard, your heart momentarily races before resuming its normal rhythm. Alright, now festival ale. We're not sure for which festival the Lake Shores Festival Ale was named, but you're certain it must have helped stoke the festivities. The full-flavoured ale, with a head that never seems to dwindle, is both smooth and potent, and indeed a favourite of the Lakeshore patrons. After consuming slightly more than half your serving, you begin to feel somewhat light-headed, and the tavern's incessant din seems just a bit louder, and your surroundings just a bit more crowded. Alright, now for the honey glazed chestnuts. Served in a large earthenware bowl, the top, the heap of steaming chestnuts roasted to perfection, is covered with a thick, shimmering glaze of golden honey. The mouth-watering senses a sublime treat for all the senses, even purio perception? It's both filling and fortifying. Well, okay, it's probably only going to refer to the five conventional senses. Okay, taste is obvious. Smell. Sight, yep, they do look good. Sound? Well, they probably make some sort of sound. Touch? Well, I guess if you the texture inside your mouth, yeah, okay. I can get it, all the senses. When at last you reach the bottom of the bowl, all you can do is consume the last of the crunchy, dripping morsels. Suddenly, now you've had everything here, something has been unlocked. You freeze as someone suddenly steals up and taps on your left shoulder as a soft, feminine voice slips into your ear. Hungry? Thirsty? Never mind any of that. Don't turn around. Just know that I'm a friend and have something for you. A gloved hand reaches from behind you and takes hold of your left hand, pressing it into a thin silver wing. The wing may be of use, but that's not what's important, whispers the voice. This meeting is symbolic, if nothing else, and in ways that others are sure to notice. Take care of yourself. We're counting on it. You hear the platter of soft footfalls retreating from behind you. Although you keenly desire to turn and catch a glimpse of the unknown woman, something inexplicable, the lurking hint of a bewildering notion prevents you from doing just that. I'm going to assume it's sophomore stuff, because whenever anything weird happens, there's a 50% chance it's sophomore stuff, because it's a very weird place. You spend a few moments examining the silver wing given to you by your mysterious benefactor, noting the peculiar marking along the band's thin outer edge. After securing the wing amongst your belongings, you turn and cast your gaze across the crowded tavern hall before turning your attention back to the Lakeshore's excellent fare. We now have a marked silver wing. This is your armour for your finger. It's transmutable. And we'll transmute it now. It provides 4 melee rating and 4 stamina points. This fiend silver wing, pressed into your hand by an unknown and unseen woman in the Lakeshore Tavern, or at least what sounds like a woman. I mean, it could have been something else that just sounds like a woman. We don't know, we didn't see her. Or it, or them, or us, or me, or you, or him. Could be him. Bears curious markings along its outer wedge that depict a series of concentric squares. Yep, it's Zarthmore stuff. Alright, now let's go transmute that wing. While I remember. Alright, that's Southwest Tosa, Theodra Silverscar's Tower. Now, I'm pretty sure I've recorded things being transmuted on this account before. And if I haven't, it's the same every time. So I'm just going to spin. I'm going to go for it. Look at your items. Okay, there are things I've got that can do transmuted. There's the marked silver wing. There's the egg-studded vest, the red egg pendant, and the twin moon bracelet. Is the twin moon? Yeah, all those, the latter three are all equipped, so there's really no reason to transmute them. Because all it does is transfer stats from the wing, from the item, to you directly, so there's no, your stats don't change. But if I transmute the Mark Silver wing, it goes from a wing I'm not using to me directly. So Mark Silver wing. Alright, if that's transmuted, it goes down to 3-3, giving me 1 melee rating and 1 stamina point. Transmute it. Alright, look away. Alright, the message is the same as always happens when you transmute, and I'm pretty sure I'll have transmuted some things. If you go through a mist, I'm sure you'll find something being transmuted. You look no worse experience, which is always something I always like to see. Alright, your melee weighting has been permanently increased by 1. And your stamina points have been permanently increased by 1. Which is very nice. Permanent stat increases for just eating everything in a... eating all the all the different foods in a tavern. I mean, what other game would you get that? Felja picks up and hands you back the marked silver ring. There you are. Not much worse having been through that, she says. Okay, she can transmute the other items, but as I mentioned before, no need to do that. Let's just leave her be. Because she doesn't want to be messed with. Right, now back to the Lakeshore Tavern. Enter the tavern, order the food and drink. You can order the food again, but it's the same message as before. Alright, now to seek out the tavern keeper. Elora Whitenell. Those early years on the streets of Fortrithic ran her afoul of the law and saw her gale for the better part of 2 long years. Is younger than her weathered features and waspy voice suggest. Fair-haired, affable woman, rumoured to be a pickpocket of extraordinary ability, oversees all the operational details of the tavern, answering directly to the Lakeshore's owner, the famous adventurer Sylvania, who I guess turned her life around. After a minute or two, you find Elora consulting with two cooks responsible for the tavern's delectable fare. She turns and greets you with a smile and promptly asks if there's something you need. So 2 options, well, 3 options. Converse, inquire about Sylvania, bid her farewell and be on your way. Let's converse with her. While conversing with the lawyer, you learn she's had growing concerns about the general safety of the region around Winter Isle Lake and often hears from travellers that confirm her misgivings. Well, there is this dragon that keeps turning up. That's a problem. It's not just around here either, she says, running her fingers through her tangled hair, but the whole kingdom, if you follow. Sure, the roads around Talanus and even Trithic may be safe enough for most, but that's precious little thought for us folk out of sight of such places. Our concerns don't reach the white ears, and that's a fact. And even if they did, would anyone listen? Well, probably. I mean, we definitely had Thane Pollen dispatches to various out-of-the-way places, and other leaders too. You speak with Lenore at length, covering a wide variety of topics, before ultimately excusing yourself so that the busy tavern keep can return to her work. Pleasure having you here, she says. We need more folk of your stripe about. Alright, seek out the tavern keeper. And I'll to inquire about Sylvania. Aurora tells you Sylvania hasn't been around the tavern much lately. Will she just stop in from time to time to check up on the state of the place? I like to keep up with things, she says, the gaze wandering around the hall. It's all too easy for all of this to get out of hand, if you know what I mean. But always things to be done, no end of it. But this keeps me out of trouble, mostly. And I have too much respect for our good landlord to let it all go to slack. What happens long as I'm about, I guess, continue conversing with her? That's the message we just had. Okay, now let's investigate a door that stands ajar. That will lead us... Whoa. Okay, I know that leads to something exciting because I've done this before several times. But even if I hadn't done it before, I would suspect that. You discover that the door, set into a length of wall that juts out from the west, stands at the top of steep stairs leading down into the tavern cellar. As you stand before the narrow opening, you suddenly spot a large rat scurrying along the foot of the nearby wall. The black-haired creature darts through the ajar door and down the steps, swiftly vanishing into the musty gloom. Well, someone's going to have to deal with that. We can't be having rats down there. They'll be getting amongst the stored food and peeing in the beer. And generally making a mess of things. Almost instinctively, you close the door, making certain it remains shut, before turning and moving away. Alright, now let's tell the tavern keeper about this. Yep, you can tell the tavern keeper about... Yep. Tell her about the rat sighting. Laura's face goes flush. She shakes her head and frowns. Sorry you had to see that, she says apologetically. There's been more and more of those critters sulking about day and night. I've done what I can, and even hired the Kingu brothers to go down into the cellar and clear them out. But it seems I've with a bigger problem than they can handle. At least, that's my read of it. You learn that the Kingu brothers, known locally as a pair of firebrands, are adept rat catchers whose services are always in demand throughout the region. Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you don't need to have, you know, professional sword-wielding adventures to deal with rats, usually, unless they're really big. Although actually Kulgari, in which case you probably want an adventurer or militia. You know, someone with formal martial training, you know, so they don't get killed. But for regular rats, rat-sized rats, with no magical powers or mystical stuff going on, a specialist at that would be better at that. And a lot easier to find. You learn that the brothers fled from the tavern cellar after less than an hour, claiming that something large and dark was stalking them. I've been down there myself since, dozens of times, says the lawyer, and I've seen nothing like what they'd described. But I can tell you, the Konoas were most certainly scared off by what they claimed to have seen. Alright, looks like this is above regular rat catchers. Oh, if only there was someone who's really good at... Oh, wait! It's me! Intrigued by what you've just heard, you begin to inquire about the cellar. Only to have Eloria seemingly jump to the conclusion that you volunteered to investigate it. Although, admittedly, that makes sense because adventurers do that. If they find a problem, they usually end up volunteering to deal with it. Possibly for pay, possibly because it's the right thing to do, possibly on the hope that something will turn up. Maybe at the request of a higher authority. That's just splendid, she says, smiling. Miss Savali would be right pleased to know that someone like you was on the job. That certainly does relieve my mind. Mind yourself down there, though. Bats are bad enough without something else or the other tossed in with them. Thank you most kindly. You attempt to explain to her that you were merely crying about the situation, fall on deaf ears, and a tavern keeper again thanks you. Asking you keep her appraised of any developments. Oh, come on. You knew you would end up doing something. Because, That's how it works in video games. If there's a problem, you end up dealing with it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been mentioned. Because otherwise, people would like, why is there this problem if I can't deal with it? I'm disappointed! Realising that it's pointless to continue, you nod and set off on your way. You'll find an option to investigate the cellar in the main tavern section, alright? And now, I can investigate the cellar. You make your way over to the cellar door, and are happy to find it's closed. With Alonia's description of the Kenwell's brother's flight from the cellar still fresh in your mind, you consider heading down into the cellar to investigate. Go down into the cellar. You cautiously pull open the cellar door and stare down into the deep, steep flight of steps. Descend out of sight into the musty gloom. How many adventures have we got where we went into the cellar of a tavern? Well, let's see. There's a lot. There's quite a few of them. There's the one under the goblin claw in. I don't know. If it took time, I could probably make a list. After taking one last look around, you draw out your light source and watch it flare to life before beginning a cautious descent into the cellar, taking care to close the door behind you. As you reach the bottom and step out onto the earthen floor of the cellar, the door at the top of the stairs suddenly creaks open just a few inches and then abruptly closes. A faint, silvery glow appears around the edges of the door for only an instant before vanishing. Okay, this dungeon uses the new... This dungeon is one of those new tile-based dungeons. So you have, as you explore, new blocks appear. I'm at the bottom of the stairs. A steep set of stairs, built out of broad wooden planks, ascends to meet the sturdy door that opens onto the tavern's main hall. Several stacks of empty crates stand beneath the stairs. Okay. Now, in these new style dungeons, you can search every square you reach on. So I'll search here. But thorough search of your surroundings. Nothing of any particular interest. Examine the stacked crates. You begin searching through the stacked crates and discover they are all empty and many of them are damaged. After several minutes, having found nothing of any particular interest, you decide to abandon your search. Suddenly, you hear something moving behind you, picking a number. Bonus of 49. 20 from agility. 10 from body. 19 from thievery. Gotta get 75 or more. Pick now! 65. Failure. Poof! Before you can spin around, a wooden crate crashes down upon your head, splitting upon impact as the force of the blows bends you sprawling backwards onto the earthen cellar floor. 33 damage. As you struggle to your feet, wiping away a trickle of blood running down the bridge of your nose, you catch a glimpse of a tall, shadowy figure darting off into the gloom. Alright, there's someone else down here. Someone who is planning to kill me, but won't succeed, because Sir Croakington is very, very strong and very, very tough. Has many skills and many magical powers. Unnerved by the encounter, you spend the next several minutes watching and listening for any sign of your unknown assailant's return. When at last you believe your attacker is no longer nearby, you prepare to resume your exploration of the cellar, mindful that the sinister stranger could be lurking anywhere in the dark. Alright, then I examine the stacked crates again, and it's the main... Okay, time to go north. A trio of levers, Three long wooden levers protrude from an iron plate set into the south wall of this small room. The end of each lever is wrapped in a length of grimy white cloth. Suddenly, billowing dust. A billowing cloud of dust suddenly and inexplicably surges out of the darkness ahead, swiftly enveloping you. Pick a number. Bonus of 30. 20 from body, 10 from spirit. Gotta get 60 more or be enveloped. Pick now. 33. Failure. I'm not doing good at checks this time. Despite your best efforts, the dust seeps into your mouth and nose and rapidly makes its way into your lungs, elicting a violent flit of coughing that makes it impossible to draw breath. 15 damage. At last, as the dust settles onto the earth floor, you stagger out of the dissipating remnants of the cloud. As you begin to recover, you find yourself wondering how the cloud came to be, which leads you to believe that it was somehow deliberately unleashed upon you. Vowing to remain vigilant, you warily resume your exploration. A bit of healing. Alright. The end of each lever is lapped in a length of white cloth. Let's search here. Make thorough searches of surroundings. Nothing of any particular interest. Examine the levers. Three long wooden levers. The ends wrapped in pieces of grimy white cloth protrude from slots in the thick iron plate affixed to the wall. The lever to the left juts outward, parallel to the floor. And okay, they're all parallel to the floor, just the lever on the left. And pull it up for no reason. You pull the lever up as far as it goes, moves in place with a sharp click. I'm going to pull them all up. Maybe that's the right thing to do. We'll see. Middle, pull up. Moves into place with a sharp clip. Lever on the right. Pull it up. Moves into place with a sharp click. Step back from the levers. Alright, now to go west. Rubbish and debris. Piles of rubbish and tall heaps of dirt are scattered throughout this small room. A pair of wooden planks stand at an angle against the wall, their uneven ends blackened by fire. Search here. Throw a search. Nothing of any particular interest. Alright, let's go west again. A table. Table for four. A rickety square table, around which are placed four mismatched chairs, stand in the centre of this small place. I guess this is just excess furniture that they just keep handy, which they have. Well, we know they have to keep chairs handy because they keep breaking, and considering it's a tavern, yeah, tables can break too, and sometimes you have to bring more tables round because you're having an event or there's this, you're having a quiz night or something. Stands in the centre of a small place. A small heap of mouldy papers west atop the table. Without warning. Billowing dust. Okay, this is the same as before. Pick now. 114 success. Holding your breath. I just jump really high. And by the time I go down again, the dust has dispersed. As the dust settles onto the earthen floor, you find yourself wondering how the cloud came to be, which leads you to believe that it was somehow deliberately unleashed upon you. Vowing to remain vigilant, you warily resume your exploration. Let's search here. Let's throw a search. Discover something. You spot something lying on the earthen floor at the base of the cellar wall. A close inspection reveals the object to be a fragment of a piece of silver jewellery. Alright, I have a silver jewellery fragment. I don't know, I'll probably be putting these together later. It doesn't do anything yet because it's a fragment. This is a fragment of a piece of ornate silver jewellery. The whole piece appears to have been held together by small strips of leather which are no longer intact. It's such a small fragment, we don't even know where the jewellery went. After placing the piece amongst your possessions, you once again set off to resume your exploration. Right, examine the papers. Most of the papers were either covered in mould or have been destroyed by the dampness that pervades the cellar. One particularly intact, partially intact sheet, however, near the top, bears a curious sketch that depicts three concentric squares. After studying the image for much longer than you intend, you manage to, with some effort, look away from it and replace the sheet on the stack. And now let's just turn that three concentric square bit upside down so it can't draw our eye again. Alright, let's go west again. Curious etchings. The walls in this section of the cellar bear four etchings, each of which depicts three concentric squares. A wooden door is set into the west wall. Okay, let's look at these concentric squares. The etchings, which appear to be done quite recently, each depict a set of three concentric squares. After gazing at the markings for several seconds, you find it difficult to look away. For after some effort, you manage to do so. Alright, let's search here. Throw a search of surroundings, discover something. It's another silver jewellery fragment. Alright, that's two of them so far. How many there is to find? Well, I guess we'll know when we find all of them. After placing the piece in amongst your belongings, you once again set off to resume your explorations. Let's move up to the door. The door is closed. A heavy iron ring affixed at an odd angle to the right side of the door appears to serve as a latch. A horizontal line of three triangles is carved onto the door's middle plank. The triangles in the middle and the white are inverted. Alright, this probably tells us which way to point the levers, I'm thinking. A marking depicting a small square is engraved just below the line of triangles. Open the door. Make several attempts to open the door, the last few involving considerable force, but the wooden barrier refuses to budge. Something unnatural.
Saving money on exterior wall lights. Now at Menards. Find your style with Patriot Lighting. Exterior lights enhance the look of your home. Choose from over 50 options from Patriot Lighting. Now through May 19th, get $10 instant savings on a single qualifying purchase of $100 or more on in-stock outdoor wall lights. Check out our entire selection of outdoor lights and see the rest of our deals happening now on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Strong seems to be holding the door in place. Okay. Middle and white go down. Okay, let's move up. Let's go back to the levers. Rubbish and debris. Trio of levers. Examine the debris. Okay, middle. Pull the lever down. Door clack. Right. Pull the lever down. Right, step back from the levers. Alright, let's go back to that door. I think that will let us through. Move up to the door. Open the door. With considerable effort, you manage to pull the door open, revealing a dense black void behind the wooden barrier. Small specks of white light appear and disappear within the inky abyss which now commands your gaze. A sense of dread washes over you as you stand staring into the void. Okay, I don't think there's supposed to be a void in a pub tavern. I mean, usually, I'm pretty sure the health inspector would not like that if you were to go into a tavern and pause, go, why is there a void here? You haven't filled in the license to get a void. You're going to have to pay your void licence. And there's a £75 fine for getting it late.
or something like that.
A sense of dread washes over you as you stand staring into the void. Well, let's just keep continue gazing, because it's there. The sense of dread is swiftly replaced by a sudden and overpowering urge to step into the void. Unable to resist the silent call, you trudge forward, your wide eyes frozen on the void's fathomless core. The instant you step into the void, your thoughts become jumbled and your surroundings vanish as you stumble uncontrollably through the inky darkness. For what seems like hours, but is actually only a few seconds, you tumble through the frigid void, struggling to regain control of your thoughts as you endeavour to comprehend your current plight. Suddenly, your mind, through still a confusing tangle of desperate thoughts, clears somewhat as a tall, tubular, yellow being floats into view. View from out the darkness below. Okay, yellow being? What's this yellow being? Dingapeel! Dingapeels, also known as plantarians, were race of banana people. Yes, banana people that inhabit the strange Neverwhore realm of Zarthmoor. These tall, tubular beings look like walking and talking bananas. Because that's precisely what they are! Despite being like their somewhat comical appearance, well, that's our perspective. Of course, by their perspective, that's what people look like. And we're the comical ones with our knobbly faces and, you know, not being a banana. And gangly legs and fingers and nipples! What's that with nipples? Despite their somewhat comical appearance, Dingapeels are fierce and skilled warriors who maintain a thriving, autonomous settlement on Zarthmoor's harsh and wild Bantakuru Steppe at the edge of the Dagasong Desert. Dingapeels, like many of the factions that inhabit Zarthmoor, are commonly distrustful of outsiders, though not generally hostile. Well, honestly, if you're in Zarthmoor, that probably makes sense. In battle, Dingapeel warriors favour two-handed pikes or heavy spears, though they also wield maces and hammers. As one might expect, they abhor bladed weapons and swords, and will refuse to employ them, given the slicing nature of such instruments. If you were a Dingapeel, you'd understand. Dingapeels are the sworn enemies of the Dingacreeps, a faction of nomadic, bipedal insectoids that prowl Zarthmoor's barren midlands. Well, I kind of hope I can be friends with both. Wouldn't that be nice? To be friends with bananas and insects. Although, considering they are sworn enemies, that will probably turn out to be quite difficult to be friends with both, or at least friends with both, and have the other know about it. But I guess if they don't know, I can be friends with both. This curious fellow, his large, shiny black eyes fixed on you in a bewildered stare, gives you a tentative wave and appears to you. Hello, Gya. Hello, Garly. No, that's not how a Dingapeel sound. Hello, Garly. No. I don't know how a Dingapeel sounds, because I've never been to Zarthmoor. Hello, Garly. Why are you here? He asks, as he tumbles slowly past. His voice much higher and more and with more nasal resonance than he expects. Don't I know you? I think not. If not, I will, because I have. What did I say? What does it mean? Oh, I'm very confused. Don't forget about us. You attempt to speak, but no sound escapes from your mouth as the banana bean continues to tumble by, swiftly vanishing into the endless void above. I saw a banana person! So cool! Suddenly, your head clears and your thoughts again completely lucid. A strange sensation washes over you, during which the image of the face of the tumbling banana man flashes through your mind. 512 experience to general, 128 experience to all skill and powers, and most important of all, your stamina points have been permanently increased by 2.
Alright, wait. I might have to... Let's see, let's re-equip the spruce smasher to recalculate. Yeah. Yeah, I had to re-equip the item so it could recalculate the stats. Bumbling banana man flashes through your mind. Woo! Two permanent stamina points. Just for wandering around at a tavern. I'm meeting a banana man. Or banana woman, or banana non-binary. I assume banana genders are complicated and something that I don't know about, but would probably be interested to learn about. The strange image fades from your mind, and you once more find yourself tumbling through the frigid void, no longer certain of either time or place. Suddenly, a blast of warm air surges past your face, and the darkness melts away, revealing you once again standing on the solid ground, for in a completely different part of the cellar. Okay, I just went two squares to the east. Alright, this is some place we've been before. Alright, we're back to the door. Well, alright, the door disappeared. And of course it did. I don't know what you expect, a door like that just to hang around. It's a crazy, mystical, weird door. Alright, south. Cluttered storage. Boxes, crates and stacks, some are resting on the floor and some are ranged on broad shelves, fill this sizable room. This safe space seems to be largely untouched by the mould and rot that infests much of the west of the cellar. I guess someone's been spritzing it with anti-mould stuff. Whatever it is they do in Swift to stop things rotting. Or maybe, you know, just cleaning it up. Without warning. Slung from the shadows, a small, jagged piece of stone suddenly hurtles out of the darkness ahead and streaks towards you. Pick a number. Bonus 39. 20 from agility, 10 from body, 9 from luck. Gotta get 75 or more. Or I guess I get hit. Pick now. 97, success. You twist to the side just in time to dodge the hurtling stone. The small, jagged projectile strikes the cellar wall with a sharp crack, leaving a noticeable mark. Your eyes immediately scour the gloom for any sign of the hurled stone source, but you discover nothing. Alright, let's search here. Throw a search, discover something. It's another silver jewellery fragment. That's 3 of them now. You spot something lying on the earthen floor at the base of the cellar wall. A closer inspection reveals the object to be a fragment of a piece of silver jewellery. I mean, I'm just assuming these are all fragments of the same piece of jewellery. Because that's just how it works in games. For convenience sake. Because, I mean, if there were fragments of different pieces of jewellery, you'll probably be able to tell. Like, one would be a silver jewellery fragment, one would be a copper jewellery fragment, one would be obsidian jewellery fragment or something. After placing the piece amongst your possessions, you once again set off
to resume your exploration.
Well, let's go south again. Uneven footing. The sloping floor of this small chamber is uneven, and in places, watted by small streams of water that pass through jagged openings in the foot of one wall. Okay. This doesn't look like something that should happen suddenly. Hunted in the dark. It is nearly too late when you hear the soft patter of stealthy footfalls moving up behind you. Okay. What's going on? What's after me? Picking a number. Bonus of 59. 20 from agility, 20 from body, 9 from luck, 10 from aura. Got to get 80 or more, or they'll get me first. Pick now. 122 success. You spin around just in time to catch a fleeting glimpse of a tall, shadowy figure vanishing into the gloom. Believing you're being stalked as you move through the cellar, you vow to remain on your guard. Alright, let's search here. Throw a search. Discover something. You discover a strange symbol composed of three concentric squares etched to nearby a wall. Based on the condition of the etching, you surmise it was done some time ago. But whether it has been done some time ago for a long time, I don't know. Tavern cellar. Okay, here's the description of the dungeon. The Lakeshore Tavern Cellar isn't the sort of place you want to spend any considerable length of time. It's damp, dark and depressing. In direct contrast, the cozy, inviting tavern above. What was that? Did you just hear something? You visited 7 of the 10 locations your exploration has revealed. You've searched 7 of the 7 locations you've explored. And it seems to be in these tile-based dungeons that the searching the locations always turns up something. Something's either very nice or needed to solve the dungeon setting. Dungeon navigation settings. Okay, there's hints. There are no hints available. I guess other dungeons have hints. This one doesn't. You can turn on grid coordinates. Turn on to view north, east, west and south coordinates for each dungeon location you visit. I guess that's probably very handy if, say, you're blind. So then you can just go, oh yeah, that lever I was going for was there. Location numbers on. Turn on to have navigation links display location numbers. For places that don't... Alright, I'll turn on both of them, actually. Close. Okay, so now every room has a number. This is number 7. Has a number, a location, and a name. And where, and the links tell you which number you're going to as well. Actually, I'm going to turn that off again because it's not quite, you don't need it as much when you can just see things. And it'd be tempting for me to read it. Okay, I've made my way to rubbish and debris, go north from there. A rippling puddle. A broad puddle fills a shallow depression at the centre of this oddly shaped room. The surface of the puddle, agitated by some unseen force, continuously ripples. Let us search here. Throw a search. Nothing of any particular interest. Alright, let's go north again. It's drier here. This room is inexplicably much drier than the surrounding parts of the tavern cellar. The air here smells almost fragrant. A small chest? A chest! Resting atop a table against the north wall appears untouched by decay. Now, admittedly, this probably belongs to Sylvania. But my adventurer sense is, you know, if you see, if you're an adventurer and you see a chest, you open it. You don't, you kind of ignore whose it might be because of your loot sense. Right, I'm going to search here first. Throw a search. Nothing of particular interest. Examine the chest. The small wooden chest, constructed out of sturdy oak planks and reinforced with iron bands, sits atop a table set against the north wall. The chest, which is closed, appears untouched by the decay that's affected almost everything else in the cellar. I guess it's just a well-made chest. Well, even though there is no legitimate reason for me to open this chest, I'm going to do it anyway. The chest is locked. A small arcane symbol emblazoned just below the lock plate seems to indicate the chest is magically protected, which really says, this is not your stuff, you should probably leave it be. I mean, you know that this is someone else's tavern, this is Sylvania's tavern. Presumably Laura probably stores things too. And I wouldn't be that surprised if people who were, say, staying in the tavern or near the tavern would ask the tavern to put something in their basement while they're nearby and dealing with and doing stuff. So there's plenty of people this chest could belong to who I really shouldn't be stealing from. But I'm curious about what's in the chest, so I'm just going to ignore all that. So there were some options. Thievery, telekinesis, shadow magic, leave the chest be, which is probably what I should do, but I'm not going to. Or just smash it! You know what? Telekinesis. Succeeded. 8xp to telekinesis. You rapidly call upon your power of telekinesis and focus it on the chest lock. After only a few moments, your mastery of mind over matter allows you to directly manipulate the lock's internals, all while avoiding triggering a deadly magical snare. Click. You cautiously lift the chest lid and peer inside. What could it be? Inside the chest, you discover a small hoard of gold. You quickly estimate that there are more than 300 gold tokens in the sizable heap. Now, the thing is, I can get gold anywhere. And this is definitely someone else's chest. So I'm going to leave it be. Well, actually, I'm going to check the wiki. Doesn't seem any actual consequences for this, so it's up to you. Leave the gold and close the chest. Leaving the gold alone, you close the chest lid. Step away from the chest. Open the chest. Open the chest. Carefully open it. Yeah, it's filled with gold. It's just close the chest. Carefully close the chest. Step away from the chest. Okay, going south then east. To what's that smell? A repugnant odour, akin to the smell of rotting meat, fills this mouldy corner of the tavern cellar. Several sets of footprints are clearly visible in the softer portions of this damp tavern floor. I mean, whose footprints? I mean, it's probably the people who work in the tavern who, you know, have to go down there. But probably at least one of those sets is the person who's stalking me. Oh, and the Kernwell brothers, they'd have left footprints as well. Search here. Throw a search. Nothing of any particular interest. Okay, now go east again. Suddenly, from somewhere far off through the darkness, you hear the faint, melodic sound of a flute. Oh dear. The dim melody, rife with sour notes, slowly fades away.
leaving you once more in the grim silence of the gloomy cellar.
I go east again, thumping from above. A steady, rhythmic thumping from overhead reaches your ears as you move through this mouldy section of the cellar. You can only assume the source of the noise is the movement of something heavy across the floor of the tavern's main hall, suddenly picking a number. Bonus of 48, 19 from thievery, 20 from aura, 9 from luck. Gotta get 75 or more, pick now. 106, success. 32 experience to thievery. The last possible moment, you spot a cleverly concealed snare and its tripwire triggering mechanism directly in front of you. After carefully disabling the trap, which appears to have been recently set, probably by the guys trying to kill me, you prepare to continue on your way. Out of the surrounding gloom, a large black rat streaks out of the gloom, finally, streaking wildly, its eyes blazing with crimson fire. It's a large black rat. It viciously attacks. I swing my club. It is slain. 5 XP. You step away from the rat's ravaged carcass and your eyes scour the surrounding darkness. After checking over your gear, you warily resume your exploration. Well, I can search this place. Do a search, nothing of particular interest. Alright, there's just one location left to go. That's directly east of the entrance. Out of the dank gloom. A gargantuan black rat lumbers out of the gloom, shrieking savagely, its eyes blazing with crimson fire. Gargantuan black rat. The gargantuan rat viciously attacks. The rat savagely tears at your flesh. You lose 20 damage. Viciously attacks. Keep going. And slain. 7 XP. You step back from the gargantuan rat carcass and exhale sharply. After checking over your gear, you warily resume your exploration. Alright, going south. Bottom of the stairs, out of surrounding gloom. It's another gargantuan black rat. Just going to quick combat that. 7 XP. Examine the stack crates. Yeah, and they're the same as before. Go east. Oddly marked casks. Various large casks. Large casks line racks set up against the walls in this sizable space. The size of the casks bear several odd markings. The markings, emblazoned on the side of some of the casks, appear to be some sort of code, represented by varying formations of shapes, dots, squares, circles and triangles. Two of the casks, however, bear markings in the form of 3 concentric squares. These markings, you discover, produce an almost hypnotic effect when your gaze rests on them for more than a few seconds. Appearing out of the darkness, it's a massive black rat. Just going to quick combat that. 6 XP. You step back from the bloodied remains of the massive rat and gaze into nearby room. Checking over your gear, you were losing your exploration. Search here. Do a search, nothing of particular interest. Okay, I've searched everywhere now. I've been to all the places, searched all the places. Now I guess I just have to keep wandering around until all the rats turn up. Out of the dank gloom, giant black rat. Quick combat, 5 XP. Peering out of the darkness, gargantuan black rat. Quick combat, 7 XP. Dank gloom, massive black rat, quick combat, 6 XP. Pulling out the darkness, giant black rat, quick combat, 5 XP. You find something nearby. Discover the following. It's a two-handed sword. It's common. It's just generic loot. Not worth bothering with. Don't know how a rat had a two-handed sword. But it did, apparently. Bear out of the darkness. Massive black rat. Quick combat. 6 XP. Discover something nearby. Oh, no. Generic loot again. Yeah, just wandering around. There's another. It's a large black rat. Turns into 5 XP. Now, is there any... No, I just think if I keep wandering around, something will turn up. Yeah, and... Keep going. Surrounding gloom. Giant black rat. Quick combat. 5 XP. Suddenly,
your heart nearly skips a beat when you suddenly take note of a tall, lanky figure lurking in the shadows near the exits of the south. A small cloud of dust swirling about his feet swiftly dissipates. You immediately call out to the skulking stranger to step forward without hesitation. A young man clad in colourful, ragged cloth attire strolls into view at the edge of your light, his white hand clutching a long and slightly curved gemshorn. Okay, what the heck is a gemshorn? I'm going to have to look that up. Gemshorn. Oh, okay, it's like a musical horn thing with holes and... Okay, it's a horn, but with holes drilled in it, so you can play it like an instrument. Okay, now we're all imagining the white thing.
Why have you gone and spoiled such sport? He asks, the expression twisted into an exaggerated frown. My rats are all dead. This seems to please you. Does it please you to rid folk of their only friends?
Taken aback by his strange manner and the odd loop to his voice, you hesitate to answer. What you feel is certainly a rhetorical question.
Well, he screams, his slender face quivering as it flushes. Does it?
Suddenly, the man draws the gem show to his lips and begins piping a rollicking tune rife with sour notes. Recalling the attacks made upon you as you explored the cellar, and believing this individual is likely the culprit, you attempt to put the question to him, only to have your voice drowned out by the strange, enchanting melody wafting from his pipe. You find yourself swiftly becoming drowsy as the strange song seems to surround and envelop you. Picking a number. Bonus of 50. 20 from mind, 10 from aura, 20 from spirit. Got to get 50 or more, or presumably I'll go to sleep and then get stabbed a lot. Pick now. 93. Success. You manage to snake off the sinister effects of the insidious tune, much to the chagrin of the piper. With your mind clear, you pointedly ask him what he's doing here.
Oh, there is no place for joy, he says, scowling. No place in your world for a respite from the cruelty of an existence so bland and forgettable. You don't understand, because you don't have to. You don't see it clearly, because you don't want to. All so very plain and so very trite.
The piper draws the gemshorn back to his lips and attempts to blow into it before suddenly lowering the instrument. With his hands visibly shaking, he nervously glances about and mutters something inaudible.
I suppose you're entertaining some rather hasty thoughts, says the young man,
backing away as he draws the gemstorm to his lips with shaking hands. I've still a friend or two about, I'll have you know.
Perhaps you'd like to meet them.
The paper plays a trio of sour notes, and within seconds, loud squeaking fills the air as the young man dashes off to the south, disappearing into darkness. Two gargantuan rats stalk out of the shadows, their fangs gashing and their eyes aglow with crimson fire. Before you can react, the giant vermin is upon you, viciously tearing at your flesh. It's a gargantuan black rat. Begin combat. The gargantuan rat viciously attacks. The rat savagely tears at your flesh for 17 damage. And I bash at its flesh, tears at your flesh for 21 damage. And slain. 7 XP. The second rat, slightly larger and more menacing than the first, streaks in on your right and attempts to deliver you a nasty bite. You narrowly dodge and attack. The attack and swiftly counter. It's a gargantuan black rat. The gargantuan rat shrugs off 13 damage because apparently they can do that. With their rat powers, the savage rat tears your flesh for 28 damage. Shrugs off 6 damage. Tears your flesh for 19 damage. Shrugs off 4 damage. Anyway, it is slain. Okay, now I'm going to quickly heal myself. Stepping back from the massive rat's mangled corpse, you quickly scan the darkness for any sign of the sinister piper. But he's nowhere to be seen. Okay, where is this piper gone? Alright, I'll just be wandering around a bit. Maybe he's at the entrance exit. Well, I've searched everywhere. Is this it? Where could there be? Examine the papers. No, we've done that. Oh, I'm just wandering around, hoping I bump into this guy. Alright, keep going. Examine the levers, step away from the levers. Right, if I try to leave, climb the stairs to the door. Right, open the door. Much to dismay, despite several 20-year efforts, the door refuses to budge. Descend the stairs again. Okay. Is this it? Doesn't feel over. I mean, he could have just mysteriously disappeared, but is this it? I'm going to have to check. Yep, that does seem to be it. You meet the guy, he sends the rats, then he's buggered off somewhere. Don't know how he buggered off, because there's only one exit, and he would be noticed, but admittedly, he's somehow been involved in strange powers, so who knows. Alright, climb the stairs to the door, open the door, pound on the door. You pound against the door for several long moments, unwilling to believe the noise will go unheard by those in the tavern's main hall. Suddenly, the door swings open and you find yourself face to face with a lawyer. The tavern keep regards you with a quizzical look as you step aside, making room for you to step through the doorway. She closes the door behind you and immediately inquires about your experience in the cellar. Yep. You will provide a lawyer with detailed accounts of your time in the cellar, including your encounters with the giant black rats, but leaving out any mention of your interactions with the sinister piper. I don't know why, but apparently you have. The tavern keep stares wide-eyed at you and shakes her head, repeatedly through the riveting narrative. "To think all of that was just below us," she says, clearly alarmed. "I'm sorry I didn't call upon someone like you sooner. I'm glad to know that we're rid of these things." "Were they really as big as you described?" Reply in the affirmative, and she again shakes her head. "Happy not to have seen any of that," she says. Still slightly unnerved by your encounter with the Piper, you ask Honora if she noticed anyone else enter or leave the cellar while you were down there. She immediately shakes her head. "I keep a close lock watch on the door most of the time," she says. "And I didn't see anyone else even go near it." You provide her with a brief description of the Piper, but she doesn't recall seeing anyone like that about. When she inquires further, you abruptly change the subject. Well, there was a portal to... There was that weird void, so I guess he slipped through there. Honoria tells you that your good deed on behalf of the tavern and its patrons will not go rewarded, and she promptly offers you a tidy sum of 500 gold. "Our good lady, Miss Savaria, would want you to have that," she says. She won't be pleased to hear about the rats, mind you, but she's happy to know they've been dealt with. "So I can accept or refuse. Well, you know what? I'll accept the gold. I mean, we cannot set the precedent that these things will be done for free, because then everyone would expect them to be done for free. And there are people who actually have to get paid for this stuff because they're not independently wealthy adventurers. So accept the 500 gold. There you are," she says, handing you the gold, as it should be. A hero's reward for heroic deed. "I don't have to tell you how relieved I am to have that tool behind us. Thank you again, Sir Croakington." Suddenly recalling the 3 silver jewellery pieces you found in the cellar, you produce and present them to Lenora, whose eyes immediately light up. "You found these where?" she asks, as you hand her the 3 pieces. "Never thought I'd see this again. Thought it'd been stolen. This is all 3 pieces. Wonderful. I can put this back together now. This was a special gift given to me quite a while back. Thank you. Alright, I've handed over the silver jewellery fragment, and I've got 256 experience to general." You spend the next several minutes conversing with Lenora before pressing matters call her to the far side of the hall. As she glances off across the crowded room, you take a final glance back at the cellar door before turning your attention elsewhere. "Well done, Ratcatcher. The Lakeshore Tavern is now free of the dangerous vermin that infested its cellar. But where is the Piper gone?" "I don't know. Maybe he's gone back to Zarthmoor." "Leave the cleanup to someone else. So I get 1,024 experience to general, and another 128 experience to all skills and powers, which is pretty nice. Okay, we've quite passed an hour, so if we investigate the cellar again..." You make your way over to the door and happy to find it's closed. There have been no further rat sightings since your excursion into the cellar, for you can't help but wonder if the remnants of your grim handiwork have been cleaned up. However, your eyes are immediately drawn to a small marking near the base of the door, which you're certain wasn't there previously. A closer examination of the mark reveals it to be an engraving of 3 concentric squares. After briefly studying the carving, you move away from the door, still puzzling over the mark's possible significance. Yes, Zatharuk has plans here, or Will has plans, or has already done his plans, because, you know, wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Okay, we're well past an hour. We're just going to go to a safe area and save. So in the next episode,
We're going to see about Flick Tap. No. I think I'm not sure how much I'll speed that up, but it will take a while. But anyway, until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.